This podcast is a proud member of the Paranormality Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to Stories of Strangeness, episode number 23.
Woo!
I don't know why I'm putting on that stupid voice.
I've just realised. I should have done the number 23 for this episode, and I haven't.
You're an idiot. We could say that this is episode number 25, and you can do 23 on your next one, and it can be about 23, and we'll just swap them over, because we can do that.
Yeah, but we'd still have to release this one on Monday.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever. Anyway.
So anyway, this week is a mic week.
Hello.
And yeah, that's Mike over there. I'm Hello. Zoe, by the way, if you're a first time listener. I apologise. We're always like this.
Hello.
And he's definitely always like that. It's a mic week. Tell us, oh beardy one.
Yeah. This is going to be the first in another series of either two or three. I'm not sure yet. Definitely two, possibly three. 16th of July, 1945. A device, nicknamed the Gadget, was detonated at the Alamogordo test range. The plutonium-based implosion device yielded 19 kilotons and created a crater over 300 meters wide. It was the first ever nuclear bomb test, nicknamed Trinity. The fallout from that bomb ushered in the nuclear age and led to the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki on August the 6th and 9th, 1945, that killed somewhere in the region of 200,000 people, most of whom were civilians. The justification was that those deaths were a tiny fraction of the people who would have died had World War II been allowed to continue. The bombings effectively ended the war, and also served as a demonstration of the US's superior firepower, along with a willingness to use it. There is a theory that there were also unintended consequences of the detonations, of announcing our technological progress to the rest of the galaxy. The original test detonation made our galactic neighbours take notice of our small blue-green orb. One lone explosion could have been something else, however. A massive volcanic eruption, maybe. The bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were deliberate, and within a few days of each other. That warranted investigation. If your neighbours started letting off fireworks at 3 a.m. one night, you'd be annoyed. You might put it down to high spirits or perhaps a very late birthday celebration. If that happened again twice in the immediate future, you'd probably want to go and have a word. In 1947, the bombings and the war were behind us, but a new threat loomed. The Cold War ushered in a new era of suspicion, covert operations, and mutually assured destruction. In the midst of all this, the US Army Air Forces sent out an unbelievable press release, announcing that they had recovered a flying disc from a ranch near to Roswell, New Mexico. Sometime in the morning of July 3rd, 1947, rancher W.W. Mac Brazel was travelling around his sizeable property in Lincoln County when he happened upon wreckage strewn across the land in an area 3/4 of a mile long and 250 feet wide. The previous evening had seen storms, and Mac remembered hearing one thunderclap that was significantly louder than the rest. The wreckage included metal, fiber or string, rubber strips, thick paper, slender sticks that may have been structural beams, and a tinfoil-like substance. The sticks had strange symbols on them that reminded Mac of Native American petroglyphs. Others who saw them later compared them to Egyptian hieroglyphs. Mac noted that the sheep in the field would not cross the debris field, and had to be herded around it. Mac had already seen newspaper reports of flying saucers, so took some of the material to his neighbours, who advised him to report it to local sheriff George Wilcox. Mac gathered up some of the debris and stored a large chunk in a cattle shed before heading into town. The sheriff dispatched two deputies to check it out and also contacted the 509th Bomb Group, who sent intelligence officer Major Jesse Marcel to investigate, who was accompanied by a counterintelligence agent. They brought the matter to the attention of Colonel William Blanchard, the commanding officer of the Roswell Army Airfield. The two deputies reported that they had missed finding the debris field, but instead found a circular area in a pasture where the sand had been turned to glass. Major Marcel, Brazel, and the agent arrived at the ranch after dark. The chunk was tested with a Geiger counter, but did not appear to be radioactive. The next day, they gathered up as much debris as could be loaded and headed back to base. Mac Brazel was taken on an aerial reconnaissance flight over his property on July the 8th to search for more wreckage, or possibly surviving crew members from the crash. There was some speculation that the disc remained airborne for a while after the explosion and finally came to rest at the foot of some rocky cliffs. This site was discovered by civilians. A report for UFO TV included eyewitness testimony from three separate sources, from an archaeologist, a soldier, and a civil engineer. They all describe a crashed disc and strewn around it several bodies. The bodies were all described as small, maybe 4 feet tall at most, with large heads and large almond-shaped eyes. The civil engineer was called Grady Barnett and had been surveying the area for an irrigation project. Barnett told his friend Vern Maltese about what he'd seen. He'd come across the crashed craft, which had split open. Nearby on the ground were four bodies, 3 to 4 feet tall, and dressed in skin-tight silver jumpsuits that covered everything except their hands and heads. Barnett described their heads as pear-shaped, and Barnett said he was standing close enough to the bodies to touch them. Shortly after, an archaeology team came across the site, followed by the military, who took everyone to one side and made them turn around while the bodies were covered with blankets. The military briefed the archaeologists and Mr. Barnett, saying they were not to divulge anything they had seen to anyone. If they did, the government would find out and know where to find them, they were told. A deathbed confession from a woman in a hospital in Florida who claimed to be one of the students who went along on the archaeological study seemed to confirm the details, including the bodies. The next day, RAAF released a statement saying that the many rumours regarding the flying disc became a reality yesterday when the intelligence office of the 509th Bomb Group of the 8th Air Force Roswell Army Airfield was fortunate enough to gain possession of a disc through the cooperation of one of the local ranchers and the sheriff's office of Chavez County. The flying object landed on a ranch near Roswell sometime last week. Not having phone facilities, the rancher stored the disc until such time as he was able to contact the sheriff's office, who in turn notified Major Jesse A. Marcel of the 509th Bomb Group Intelligence Office. Action was immediately taken and the disc was picked up at the rancher's home. It was inspected at the Roswell Army Airfield and subsequently loaned by Major Marcel to higher headquarters. Walter Hout was the Air Force Lieutenant Public Information Officer who wrote the copy and delivered it to the local newspapers and radio stations. He was blamed for jumping the gun on the story. He maintains that he was set up, along with Colonel Blanchard. Blanchard had been the officer who had ordered the debris field to be cordoned off and guarded. The story got picked up by media via wire services like the Associated Press. In a short amount of time, the briefing had gone global. The interest in the story was so intense, Colonel Blanchard was unable to place an outgoing call due to the switchboard being jammed with incoming calls. Then, Mac Brazel vanished, and the army could not find him. He was found by Walt Whitmore, co-owner of local radio station KGFL, who offered Mac a place to stay in order to get away from the incessant questions that were being sent his way. Whitmore and co-owner Judd Roberts interviewed Mac, but got a call from Washington, D.C. to say if they broadcast their interview with Mac, their license would be suspended and they would be put out of business. Mac was then placed under house arrest by the army and grilled on the subject, as well as having a complete physical. The army, in the meantime, retrieved every copy of the initial press release as humanly possible. Mac then turned up at KGFL, escorted by officers, where he told an entirely different story to the one he'd told Whitmore and Roberts. US Army officials quickly changed the narrative on the story, claiming the debris found was from a weather balloon. They released pictures of Major Jesse Marcel with supposed pieces of the balloon. These images were reported to have been staged with fake debris, however. According to Major Marcel's son, his father came home with some of the real debris. He remembers seeing the strange symbols on the beams and is certain that what he saw was not a weather balloon, not anything that had been built on Earth. Back at the crash site, there were now over 60 personnel, as well as trucks and other equipment. Downed weather balloons have previously been found and turned in by civilians. They could be packed into the trunk of a car. So why all the trucks? Even Mac had found weather balloons on the ranch before, so was familiar with them. Another witness, Frankie Rose, recalls seeing pieces of metal from the crash. She described a state trooper pulling out a balled-up piece, like tinfoil, from his pocket. As the trooper placed it on the table, it spread itself out, almost like quicksilver, before resuming its previous shape, and without a single wrinkle on it. It was very thin and shiny, and about a foot square. She bent it. It didn't crinkle or make a noise, and it went back to its flattened shape straight after. There is some evidence from witness testimony that claims that one of the occupants of the craft survived and was taken to the hospital on the base. One of Frankie's friends told of a soldier she'd known who had been told to guard the bodies but not to look. One of them decided to peek under the tarp. He saw the same small, large-headed humanoid described previously. The local mortuary in Roswell got several calls from the hospital at the airbase, asking about the preservation of tissue and blood and what certain chemicals would do to samples. Glenn Dennis was the manager of the funeral home and remembers receiving the calls. Glenn thought there had been a car or plane crash possibly at the base. Later the same day, Glenn drove an airman who had been injured in a car accident to the base hospital. He saw debris in the back of an army vehicle. He reports seeing something like hieroglyphs on the beams. Dennis entered the emergency room and saw a nurse who he knew well. She warned him to get out as fast as he could, otherwise he could end up in serious trouble. On his way out, he remarked to an officer about the debris and speculated about a possible crash. Glenn was then whisked away into a room where he was interrogated and even threatened with death. He was warned not to say anything, but Glenn told the man to go to hell, as he was a civilian and the army couldn't touch him. The second man in the room told Glenn that if they ordered it, someone would end up picking his bones out of the sand. Glenn met the nurse the next day for lunch at the officers' club. She was on the verge of hysteria, as she described assisting two doctors with the dissection of the bodies at their request. She described a terrible stench that made her and the doctors ill. Indeed, she was still unwell when she met Glenn the next day. The nurse was a devout Catholic and had found her faith shaken. She described the bodies as having only four fingers on each hand, and the fingertips looked like suction cups. They had no ears, just orifices with a small lobe of sorts that looked like it could close over the hole. They had no nose to speak of, and a mouth that was just a slit. Oddly, the mouth cavity was very shallow and did not seem to extend into any digestive tract. Also from the mutilated bodies, she could see that the arm anatomy did not correspond to human anatomy. The nurse did not touch her food that day, and then made her excuses to go back to the barracks as she felt ill. Glenn never saw her again. He called the next day and was told she was unavailable. The same thing happened the next day after that. On the third day, he was told she had been transferred. About 2 weeks later, he received a letter from her, saying she was okay but didn't have time to write more. She gave an APO number for him to send mail to. That APO number corresponded to one from England. He wrote to her, but received his letter back with the words, "Return to sender, deceased." A former pilot told his wife in 1982 about his involvement. They bought a newspaper that contained a story about the Roswell crash. He said he'd been wanting to tell her for years, and now that the story seemed to be public knowledge, he could finally talk to her about it. He'd been the pilot who had taken the crashed craft to Dayton, Ohio, to what is now Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. All told, there were 9 flights from Roswell between the 6th and 10th of July, taking large crates of materials marked top secret to Fort Worth, Washington, D.C., and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. When Mac Brazel came back to Roswell after changing his story, he suddenly had new money to buy a pickup truck, start a meat locker facility, and buy a new house. This was despite people previously describing him as dirt poor, debunking the myth. In 1994, the US government gave a different explanation for the Roswell crash after an investigation. It wasn't a weather balloon, they said, but rather a different type of balloon used in a secret operation during the Cold War, under Project Mogul. This project sent balloons up to monitor airspace for Soviet missiles, essentially an early warning system. Major Marcel mentioned in the book The Roswell Incident that the photo was not staged, and he was indeed holding some of the wreckage recovered. Even ufologists say that it looks like parts of a balloon. And after that was pointed out to Major Marcel, he changed his story to say it was not the material that was recovered. Marcel also had a history of embellishment, to put it politely. He previously claimed that he had been a pilot and had earned 5 air medals for shooting down enemy pilots, all of which was proven to be fabrication. Glenn Dennis has been shown to be an unreliable witness after it was shown that his nurse did not, in fact, exist. After that, he changed the nurse's name. It could be that he gave her a false name to begin with to protect her, or her memory, but it does not build faith in his word. Other deathbed confessions have been cast into doubt too, having been given at times when the patient was confused or medicated. None of these facts stop the UFO industry in Roswell, New Mexico, though, which features a crashed UFO by the side of the road with aliens thumbing for a lift, a UFO-themed diner, and various other UFO paraphernalia, which bring thousands of dollars of tourism money into the small city every year.
Ghost stories are always scarier when they're told by the very people who experience them. Hi, I'm Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And we're the hosts of the Homespun Haints podcast.
We talk to people just like you who've come face to face with ghosts, demons, haints, and other strange paranormal phenomena. All of it makes for a chilling good time.
So grab yourself a sweet tea, turn off the lights, and listen to some eerie, true ghost stories on Homespun Haints, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not scared. Are you?
So what do I think?
What do you think?
Well, I don't think you debunked it, love. I think that was a piss poor attempt at debunking. I don't think that nothing happened there. I think they have been incredibly clever with their continuous changing of their stories. And then that thing in 1994 was like, actually, it was this, but we couldn't tell you at the time. We're like,
yeah,
no.
There was actually 2 investigations, one in 94 and then again in 97. And they both said it was a balloon from Project Mogul, which had these other devices on them that were kind of vaguely disc-shaped.
Yeah,
and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it sounds suspect but marginally plausible.
But also there's that whole thing of the 90s, and well, that's when the X-Files got all big, didn't it? So it kind of pushed that back into people's, maybe business was kind of slipping a little bit.
A bit slow, yeah.
People had, well, I mean, I'm being serious in the fact that if Roswell and like the cafe and everything bought a lot of business into the town.
Well, maybe, just the myth. Let's call it a myth. The myth of the UFO crash.
Yeah.
Brought
a lot of people into town. But after that, you know, things start to fizzle out a bit.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay.
Chris Carter creates a show that might build some
of
these
talking about... it's always good to do a bit of a revamp, isn't it?
Yeah.
And give a slightly different story to appeal to maybe a slightly different audience. And the aliens did become really big in the 90s.
Yeah.
So... then maybe the resurgence of like the popularity of aliens led people to question it more, and so they thought, shit, we better actually
give
something to go, actually, yeah, we were lying, but this is the reason. But
even a big spy balloon, I can't imagine would take that many crates and trucks.
This
to
is
move.
It. It's like, oh well, if you're saying it was this, then it blatantly wasn't, because you don't need that much.
Well, it was. Yeah,
space.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a weird one. There was a really weird theory that if you go on the Wikipedia page, which I'll link to in the notes, where they tried to explain the bodies from witnesses saying they'd seen them, and several of these witnesses had never met before,
yeah.
You know, didn't have any way to corroborate their stories, but came out with very similar tales.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, oh, some of them are misremembering bodies that they saw other times during the war, because it was just
randomly together, even though they don't know each other.
Yeah. But also there was a really weird theory that Stalin had been kind of growing kids, but like to use as pilots,
kids,
like breeding kids with genetic defects so that they were smaller and had bigger heads and stuff like this, to use as pilots for the Soviets.
Genetically modified child
kind
pilots.
Kind of, yeah. I don't think like genetically modified as we think of it now, but kind of,
Genetically kind of adjusted or controlled or something.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah.
The argument like would really being, though, weird. why would you decide, oh, we'll give them four fingers instead of five and make them into suction cups?
Well, it didn't say that. I think basically they were saying that there was a theory that it was just these pilot kids.
Yeah.
And they'd kind of bred them almost like jockeys kind of thing. So that they were smaller, they could fit in a smaller plane, which would be harder to track by radar and was more kind of stealthy. And they could fly over the US and drop nuclear bombs on the US. And presumably one of those Soviet planes crashed with children in it. And anyway...
I'm sorry.
It was more implausible than the aliens.
Have they never met children? Would you put children, no matter how intelligent, in charge of nuclear bombs?
Not generally, no.
No, I wouldn't even put them in charge of, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you never know what a kid's going to do. It doesn't matter how controlled and intelligent and, like, down-to-earth and calm a child is.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, one that's maybe been kept in an institution and like properly, those are the ones you've got to worry about.
We're thinking kind of Winter Soldier / Black Widow type, you know, agents that have been socialized to be pilot assassins, whatever, I don't know. But yeah, I think we can all agree that generally don't put kids in charge of nuclear weapons is a good all round rule.
Or man babies.
Yeah, I don't know. It's if you read the Wikipedia page, basically Wikipedia goes, this never happened.
How much did they pay Wikipedia to say that?
Yeah, good point.
Wikipedia, anyone can put something on Wikipedia, can't
anybody
they?
Can edit it.
Edit it.
Although I don't know if anybody can anymore. I think you maybe have to sign up.
Yeah, but don't you think that the US government...
Full stop or
the US government's
or
probably got a Wikipedia person sitting there going, oh shit,
I'd
they've put
amazed.
The truth up again. Quick, change it, change it, change it. they said it. Oh, they said it's not real. Or they said it's real. They've got proof. There's photos. Quick, take it down. Take it down.
Yeah. Well, there was the whole alien autopsy video that came out. I don't know if you remember the whole hoo-ha
about
that.
There was quite a hoo-ha.
Because that was purported to be real and then proven to have been staged. And the guy that owned it, who'd paid, I can't remember how much, or, you know, it was just silly money. He then said, oh, yeah, we had to stage it because the original film was too degraded to be able to show. And it's like, you don't go to the Jim Henson workshop and say, can you knock me up a couple of aliens because the real film's not very good. We'll just stage it and tell it.
You show the real film.
Yeah.
And say, look, it's really bad quality, but this is real. You don't go,
But the problem is then, of course, even if you show the real film and say this is really bad quality, people are going to go, it's all set up. It's
like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
You really are in any kind of paranormal stuff. I mean, look at the guys who, Patterson and Gilman, who supposedly filmed a Bigfoot and then had 40 years of hassle because of it. So, yeah, you are definitely damned if you do, damned if you don't. There was even one woman who said about it, I think she was the lady whose husband had been the pilot, and she was very emphatic because I watched a thing by UFO TV on it all, which I'll link to as well, but I can't remember the name off the top of my head. It's obviously going to include Roswell. If you search for it, it's on Amazon Prime. But they interviewed quite a few people, and she was the wife of the pilot who'd said,
thank goodness, by the way, now I can tell you.
Yeah, because literally they saw it. I don't know if they saw it in like the National Enquirer or something, or whether it was a genuine story in a decent newspaper that's not, you know,
The Sun.
Toilet paper with print on it. But she was very emphatic that this was a guy who did not make stuff up.
Yeah.
He was a very kind of serious, kind of down-to-earth kind of guy. And he literally said, I took that shit to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Yeah.
And she was like, if it had been anybody else telling me, I'd have been like, but she was like, he was just not that kind of person.
Yeah. I was disappointed by the guy with the nurse. Because when you said that, my heart went, oh my goodness. And then the letter came back with just deceased.
So she got transferred to England. And
then,
But
did she get transferred? How do we know that letter was from her in the first place?
Well, there's all sorts of things, isn't there? But it does sound a little bit like My Canadian Girlfriend stuff. It's like, because apparently they...
I don't know what you're referring to.
Basically like Scott Pilgrim having a Canadian girlfriend. It's like, you can't meet her because she's in Canada, but it's cool.
Yeah,
she's really real. Yeah, people who make up imaginary girlfriends.
Oh, right,
and stuff
like that, okay.
So because he had, apparently they'd spoke about marriage. So they were like...
It,
on the program, it introduces him and says, blah, 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 he knew this nurse. And it says, oh, he knew her quite well. And then about sort of 10 minutes later, it comes back to him and it goes, and marriage had been discussed. I'm like, oh, well, so he knew her better than just quite well.
So, yeah, it's not like, oh, it was a friend or an acquaintance. It was a girlfriend, a partner.
But I found it slight weird difference. That he took an injured airman to the base.
Yeah.
And then just wandered into an emergency room.
Yeah.
It's like... I guess that could happen.
Well, I wouldn't have thought in a military hospital.
They wouldn't kind of just let you wander around.
No, I mean, in a normal hospital these days, you are not allowed to wander around.
I know, but this is 1947, don't forget. It was a very different time. You know,
but you would think if there were aliens, they would be like under armed guard.
But if this is the first time this has ever happened, they're all running around like headless chickens trying to figure out what the hell to do. They've got at least two of them in a room where they're decomposing and the smell is making people ill and they're trying to dissect them and figure out what the hell they are. You know.
Who knows what's going on? No, I don't know, because there is that whole thing if there were literally like dozens of cars and people at the crash site, why on earth wasn't there like dozens of cars and people or the, you know,
equivalent?
At the hospital, those people would have been guarded. Also, he wouldn't have been allowed into the hospital, surely.
Well,
if he's dropping something off, he'd be like, I'm here with this. And they'd be
again,
like, stay in your car.
Different time. The war was over. It was technically peacetime. They weren't as on high alert or whatever. And it was 1947. I don't know what the protocols were
back then. When we took Penny to the bloody RAF hospital when she'd gashed open her knee. There were armed guards at the gate to go into the hospital.
In what, 1990, 1980 maybe?
She wasn't born in 1980.
All right, well, you know.
It probably would have been more like 1990. Yeah. And they were like, what do you want? And this was like Ely Hospital, and you had to tell them why you were coming into the hospital grounds.
Yeah, and it was like nearly 50 years later. And like I say, if this is the first time this has ever happened, they're just going to be scrambling to get things done and not necessarily thinking about.
Oh,
it's all very easy to look at things from today's perspective and go, well, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they have that?
I suppose.
But if something happens for the first time, you deal with it in whatever way you can. And, you know, go back 50 years, the protocols weren't the same. It was different.
I'm sure they've got protocols in place now if alien bodies are discovered. And
But yeah, it was a bit of an odd. It was weirder than I knew, really, because I kind of knew the rough idea of the story and I'd read some bits and pieces. There was something in, not the current issue, but the previous issue of the 14 Times, where some guy was trying to go back to Roswell and they were looking at searching various places to see if they could find any more debris. Because although the army have probably combed the place to within an inch of its life, there were caves in the area and there's like there was a well that was ridiculously deep.
Yeah.
So they're like, maybe there's something down there, you know, but I don't know. I don't think that's obviously then got the go ahead with COVID being around and everything. It's all just got kind of put on hold.
And the army's gone, quick shit, let's quickly look down that well and in those caves before he gets there.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll do that way quicker. We can just helicopter over there.
Nip over there with a couple of metal detectors or
that's
whatever.
That's it.
But yeah, it's what I find weird is that they put out a press release saying, we've recovered a flying... I mean, that's not hearsay. That's
it's weird.
Fact. That was printed in the newspapers.
And then they backtracked because they realised that
you
they
can check
really...
Yeah.
They went, oh, shit, we've written that in writing now.
Yeah.
We can't take that back.
Yeah.
Now we have to we have to tell them more.
Yeah, because obviously somebody went, oh, wow, we've found one of those flying discs everybody's going on about, put out the press release and went, we probably shouldn't have told... They did a Hagrid, basically.
Yeah. I should not have said that.
The Russians might find out.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And that's basically what I think happened. But it is very odd that there were several witnesses that all had very similar stories. Like, almost all the witnesses they interviewed on this thing, and they said there was more than they interviewed more people than they actually showed on the program.
Yeah.
The film, whatever. And everybody they interviewed, they did a full background check on.
Mm-hmm.
So they vetted them pretty thoroughly. And most of them corroborated each other's stories. They all said that the beings were like 3 to 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
All said, a lot of them said they were wearing like skin tight silver jumpsuits and that kind of thing. The report of only 4 fingers and the kind of nose and stuff only came from the supposed nurse.
Right.
Which we don't know if she ever existed or Glenn Dennis made her up. But there's a lot that should be able to be corroborated. I mean, there should be telephone records saying if the army hospital phoned the local funeral home. Because he said he got several, it wasn't just one, he got several
phone calls
saying,
so long ago,
if
where
we
are
were
those
to
records?
Add this chemical to blood, what would it do? But yeah, there was more reports as well. There was like one of the things said, and I think it was from the nurse again, that their blood was clear. They didn't have red blood. They had clear blood.
Blood.
And like I say, the mouth just seemed almost like a puppet's mouth.
Yeah. So why do they have it then if it doesn't go anywhere?
Well, there's several theories, and one of them is that we're going to call them greys because that's
what they are
the
called.
Normal thing is what they're called. They're not actual biological entities. They are kind of genetically modified clones that are used almost like drone workers.
Right.
So they're not, although they're kind of, it's difficult to say kind of how, but yeah, in the comic Appleseed, you have clones that are actually derived from multiple people.
Right.
So they're not a clone of one person, they're a clone of multiple people.
Clone
and
of
then they
the
are raised.
Monster.
They're not raised by parents or a family or anything like that. They are raised in a center.
Yeah.
Pretty much by computers and robots.
Yeah.
So some of the nuances of human interaction are a little bit lost on them. And in the comic, they're called Bioroids.
Yeah.
So they're flesh and blood people, but they've been cloned from multiple sources and then they've been socialized by computers and a kind of a system rather than by people. So they act a little bit more like computers than people, but they're kind of somewhere in between the two. And that's what the kind of greys are analogous to in that way.
So what if we have this intelligent life out there and they've seen us, you know, dropping our bombs and making a noise and they've come around to go, shut that noise, that kind of thing.
Well, it's more like they think, don't blow shit up because that's really dangerous.
Yeah, that's really bad and what you're doing. But they think to themselves, because they are an intelligent thing, like, we need to make ourselves look like them so they're less threatened by us.
Right.
Because there is that whole thing of like for like, you know, like seeing something that you recognise.
Yeah, because it's the film Contact, isn't it, where the aliens look like her father.
But basically it's taking that, maybe that's as close to our form as they could get. And they're like, we don't need mouths, but we'll put an indent there because they seem to use their mouths a lot. You know, they've kind of adjusted themselves slightly to as close to our kind of physiology as they can get.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we still think they look weird because we're judgmental bastards.
Yeah. If they're kind of interdimensional beings, they might have the ability to change their forms to a certain extent, but
yeah,
not.
But not completely. They're like, we haven't got enough stuff to make us 6 foot tall.
I mean, if you want to go into the whole aliens thing at the minute, there's various theories about different types that visit Earth, one of which are called Nordics because they are basically tall, blonde.
Oh, yes, I heard this.
And you would walk past one in the street and never know.
Yes.
So there's Greys, there's Nordics, there's Reptilians.
Yes.
Or Saurians, I think they're sometimes called. And there's probably loads of others as well.
And they've bred, haven't they? We're like half the globe.
If you want to go the David Icke route, then basically he believes that the Saurians have come to Earth and either interbred with humans or have taken up positions of power and are able to change shape, but feed off the blood of the young and all this kind of thing.
Oh, no, this was more that they've kind of, like, they've been breeding with humans for so long that there are little people out there who don't even realise.
Well, yeah, but there's also the theory that humans were actually bred off from apes by aliens in an attempt to make a sentient race.
Oh, okay.
So that, yeah, basically we were tinkered with by aliens in the long history.
I'm sure I've said it before, but, you know, I'm pretty sure the Egyptians had help from something else.
Well, there's the whole thing about like the elongated skulls and stuff that you find in a lot of Egyptian art. They're wearing hats that make their skulls look longer.
Yeah.
And in some of the pictographs, they actually aren't wearing a hat and their skulls still look long.
Yeah.
And we found there is elongated skulls.
There was a practice, though, of like head binding that made that happen.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's the same with like stretching the necks and stuff. It's something that's just done from a very young age.
I think
age.
We've also found, and I probably should have researched this before I did this show, but there we go. I think we found skulls that are elongated but can't be attributed to binding.
Interesting.
And it's kind of like, well, was that a separate race of humans? Like, you know, not like the necessarily like the Neanderthals, but like a different branch of humanity.
Yeah.
Because at one point there was Neanderthals, Denisovans, and not Homo habilis, Homo sapiens.
Homo erectus.
Was before sapiens, but we're Homo sapiens.
Yeah.
All coexisting at the same time. And there's possible interbreeding going on there and that kind of thing. Because the more research they do now, the more they realise that Neanderthals weren't dumb, ugly brutes that we thought they were. They had very complex societies and actually in a lot of ways weren't much inferior to Homo sapiens.
Which doesn't surprise me, really.
But we wiped them out because we're aggressive bastards.
Yeah.
Same with the Denisovans and stuff like that. Because I think the Denisovans that are really short, but there was a race of very short people at one point. And there are obviously rumours of giants as well, that we supposedly found giant skeletons, some of which are stored in the Vatican or the Smithsonian or somewhere.
Interesting. But if you're the Denisovians, you say?
Denisovans. Yeah.
Well, if they're all really short, then we would be giants to them. So
I don't think they're like super tiny or anything, not like fairy
small. Not like Lilliput type style.
No, I think they were kind of probably, possibly even taller than pygmies. I'm not sure, but yeah. But obviously, they've said that it's possible that the pygmies are, again, an offshoot of something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's difficult because the giants, there's only a certain size the human body can get to before it just collapses under its own weight. So, like, when you see Ant-Man go giant on the Avengers, it just could not happen.
Yeah, it His heart would have to have a different physiology, wouldn't it?
Even if you make it bigger, it doesn't mean it's strong enough to do the job it needs.
That's why you can't have a blue whale on land.
Exactly, yeah. That and the fact that they take up an absolute shit ton of space.
I mean, the fish tank, holy moly.
I mean, you could put one in the Tesco's car park and no bugger would be able to park anywhere.
They'd be angry, wouldn't they?
Plus, there'd just be a big whale there getting dry and getting annoyed and demanding krill.
But then it turns into a pot of petunias and it's fine.
Yeah. It's all good. And you've just got a pot of petunias that goes, oh no, not again.
It was petunias, wasn't it?
I believe it was, yeah.
That's all right then.
It's a bowl of petunias.
I was just like, oh my goodness. Am I going to get this reference completely wrong? I'm a complete tit of myself.
It was a mug of daffodils. It was a bowl of petunias, it was described as, yeah.
Oh no.
And if you've read them all, you do find out why it thinks, oh no, not again.
I haven't read them all. I've only read the first three.
Yeah.
Because who writes a trilogy in five parts?
Douglas Adams. It was almost six parts, but yeah, he died. Actually, they did release another one, but it's obviously not
someone else wrote.
By him.
Was it his son finished writing it?
No, it was another guy called Owen something or other.
Okay.
And it might have been Owen Coffer, who's already an established author in his own right, but I can't remember. But yeah, I think that bit is in book three.
I think that's really
in Life, the Universe, and everything.
I didn't finish book three then. Basically, my friend Janie, when I was about 15, she bought me the big trilogy in five parts. And it's a kicking around it somewhere still with...
Well, there's one up there. That's my version.
Mine is a big hardback one. And it's still got a bit of the ribbon that she wrapped it up with as the bookmark. And you can see that I got like...
So far through.
Like about... It wouldn't even be two thirds, not even halfway through. And for some reason, just stopped. And I've never picked it up again.
Oh, so I used to read the whole lot every year.
But the TV series.
Oh, like, yeah, the old BBC TV series was.
I absolutely adored that. I've got so many memories of
that. And the radio
show
was really good as well.
Don't talk to me about the film.
I do not want to talk about the film. The film was a travesty.
Oh.
Even taking into account the fact that Douglas Adams himself was completely fine with the fact that every different media version of it
is different,
contradicted
completely.
The other versions. Yeah. So the film contradicted the TV. Well, he didn't live to see the film, unfortunately. I think he died before it was finished, but he was involved in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he knew that the radio show contradicted the book contradicted the TV series, and he was fine with it. He was just like, yeah, whatever.
A story's a story though, isn't it? If the story itself, if it makes sense, it doesn't...
Yeah,
it's not so bad if it does contradict or go a little bit wrong from the book.
Yeah,
if they're separate entities.
Yeah, I mean, there's not
although
that
it isn't not
many things that have been done that have been completely faithful translations from book to film. Even Lord of the Rings missed out a massive chunk about Tom Bombadil and all the rest of it, and The Hobbit was just a shit show.
It was bizarre because it's such a small book.
But it's like Philip Pullman said about the film. That they did, because they did the first book as the film. They were going to do the other two books.
They were.
But the first film flopped completely. And he was getting hate mail from people saying, the film's rubbish. Why have you let them do this? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's like, you obviously don't quite understand how this works. Somebody writes a book, and then if they decide to allow it, a film company can option it. Once they option it, you get very little say in what happens unless... you're very lucky and have a very good contract lawyer.
Yeah.
But he always said, the book's still there.
Yeah, read
you
the book.
You can still read the
you
book.
Don't have
it
to,
hasn't changed
you don't have
the story
to watch
of the
film.
Book. It,
yeah.
You know, if you don't like the film, that's fine. The book is still the book. It hasn't ruined the book. The book's the same. I kind of agree with that.
Although I will say that when you have a book that you truly, truly love.
Yeah.
And because there are people out there who don't enjoy reading. And when they... see the film and go, oh, that was a rubbish film. You're just like, it
but,
breaks
yeah,
your heart a little bit because you're like,
you
but this
knew.
this story, no.
Yeah. I think the closest book to film translation I think I've ever seen was Fight Club. And even then, I think the ending was a bit different.
Do you know what? I've got halfway through Fight Club, and I'm going to say, this is really unusual for me, because normally I plow through a book and I fight to the end, even if I'm not enjoying it, because I have to know what happens, even if it makes me angry. But Fight Club, I think it was one of my in-between books, and it still sat beside my bed as an in-between book.
Oh, I really enjoyed it, and it's actually quite short, so it's not too much of a task to take it on.
But I think it does also depend on which one you watch or read first. Like if you read something and then watch the film, you're generally disappointed.
I think if you watch the film and then read the book, basically what happens is you have a whole load more story.
Yeah, you suddenly realize so many more things and go, that's why that happened.
You get to see inside the characters' heads a lot more than you can with a film.
Yeah.
So yeah, books are always best anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
Well, we've digressed from aliens to books.
Yeah, let's digress again.
What?
Let's digress again.
I was going to say it's not such a terrible digression. Mm-hmm. We've done worse. Well, I mean, we've got the question we need to ask. Alien pops around for tea. What kind of biscuit do you offer it?
I mean, if it's a grey.
If it's a grey and it doesn't have too much of a mouth. It
doesn't have a digestive tract.
Malteser. I know it's not a biscuit.
It's like a puppet's mouth.
It's like a round bit, so they could just pop it in and like just sock it.
They'd eat biscuits like Cookie Monster.
Oh, God, well, that's messy. We'll have to say, you're going outside.
Well, we'll just say we're not offering you a biscuit.
That's a waste of biscuit.
Yeah, all you're going to do is smash it into bits and let it
fall
on my carpet.
I've got some cardboard. I'll just cut some cardboard into round circles and scribble on some little chocolate chips and just offer them that. They've never had biscuits before. They don't know. They'll be like, these biscuits are terrible. I'm not having these again.
Yeah. What brand are these? I'm not having these.
We'll just say, those are all biscuits on earth are like that.
Yeah.
And they'll go, we're never having biscuits again. And we go, yes, we've saved the biscuits from the aliens.
Yeah. Just offer them a coaster.
Oh, no. You know what it is? It's a coaster soaked in, what was it? Oh, my God. Black books.
It wasn't soaked in anything. He was just pissed out of his head on wine.
Tasty biscuit.
Was this some sort of delicious biscuit? It's a coaster.
There you go.
Are there any more?
Because that's it. That's what we offer them.
Yeah, basically because Manny was saying his taste buds have been killed by.
Was it years of smoking and drinking?
Yeah.
Oh, no. You could offer them. A little flying saucer sweets. they'll be like,
are you taking a piss?
We're like, no, you eat it. And they're like, what? No.
But there might be tiny versions of us inside.
And then they stick it in their mouth.
Ship-ception.
They put it in their mouth.
Yeah.
And because obviously it only needs a tiny bit of moisture for it to go, and it goes, and it like gums and mouth closed. But even though it's not a mouth, but then the fizzy's in there and they'll just be like, whoa.
They're just losing their shit, not knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, because they've got sherbet in or something.
Sherbet,
I hated them.
The thing is, though,
disgusting.
If you found a good one where the shell was really crisp because it was fresh, you'd crunch into it and it would kind of just dissolve completely away instantly.
Yeah.
And the sherbet was really fizzy. It was like, oh, this is amazing. If you got a shitty one, you put it in your mouth, it suddenly coated your mouth in this weird skanky slime and the stuff inside was just like sweet and then it went all like paste and it was rubbish.
I wouldn't even want to risk it for a good one because the good ones don't sound that good. Anything kind of rice papery, no.
But it just... If it was good, though, it would just disappear completely and you wouldn't notice it.
But I didn't enjoy the sensation or the texture. They're weird.
Fizzy, fizzy, fizzy. I didn't have them very often because the chances of getting a good one was very, very small.
Boke.
I'm sorry, what?
Make me boke. Sorry, that's up north slang for throwing up.
Like
vomit.
Gip.
Vomit, yeah.
Make you gip.
Make you boke. No. I've never been into sweets.
Fizzy sweets.
Like gummy sweets and all. I'll have the odd one. There's something, I'll have an odd wine gum, but I'll just...
wine.
People who come into work and go, oh, I've got Percy Pigs. And I'm like, you can shove them up your nose for all I care. I'm not having one. They're disgusting.
Oh,
they make me gip.
I did love a Percy Pig.
Ugh, no. The only way I'd eat a Percy Pig is if you completely covered it in peanut butter.
For those of you that don't know, Percy Pig is a gummy sweet that looks like a pig. We're not talking about an actual pig covered in peanut butter.
I don't think they're bacon flavoured though, are they? Because
they are definitely not bacon flavoured.
They're just weird gummy. They're like Haribo, all that kind of shit. I can't be dealing with it. It's horrible. No. And adults that are really into it make me suspicious.
I'm just like looking over at my big bag of gummy sweets.
Yeah, your big bag of Ruby Doobie stuff. And
actually, that bag is our daughter's.
Oh, that's fine.
I split them into...
She's 9. No, sorry, she's 10.
Terrible
it's,
father.
It's been a day. I've not quite got used to it yet. It's like when the new year changes over and you still write the old year on a form and you go, oh, bugger.
I split them up so that entire bag is hers.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, no. Once you've hit like 15... You should not be eating kids' sweets.
Honestly, they do sound me a bit funny.
Well, then don't bloody eat them. That's your body going, like, oh, look, this is just toxic.
No, it's like it's all the sugar. I'm like, I've been...
Sugar's
it's like
toxic.
Rocket fuel.
It's not good
rocket
for you.
Rocket fuel.
Literally,
big cup of black coffee.
For decades, people have been going, don't eat too much sugar. It's not that great for you. It causes metabolic syndrome and diabetes.
But I burn it all off with my madness.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Of course you do.
I have a big cup of black coffee and a couple of gummy sweets and I am good to go. That is like, that gets me like the school run. I'm like zooming there, zooming back, and I get home and go, ah.
Yeah, you get home and you have a big sugar crash. Yeah.
And I think maybe that's time to.
Time to piss off.
Well, no, I just like to catch all the random threads and pull them all together and say.
And weave them into a small shawl for an Andorran woman named.
Meg.
Why not?
I don't know.
Yeah.
What?
That was the llama.
Oh, God.
That was the llama saying Meg.
The llama.
I don't know. A llama. I recently found out, actually, what the difference between llamas and alpacas is and how to... No, it's not a joke.
Oh, God, okay.
How to discern the difference. Like, llamas are generally bigger.
Yeah.
So llamas are larger overall. And they have kind of more hair-like fur, if you like. So it's kind of... shorter and strands. Alpacas
are woolly.
Yeah. Which is obviously why a lot of people have them for the alpaca wool, whatever it's called. I don't know.
You can tell that because in The Emperor's New Groove, when his hair gets wet, it goes all long.
It goes
and
all lank, yeah.
Yeah, rather than...
Llama face. I love that. It's one of the few Disney movies I actually like. Although I suppose technically the Marvel Cinematic Universe is now Disney movies, so I like those, and Star Wars.
You can be quiet now. You've digressed really badly. So, my love.
No, touchy.
Do we have a new review?
We do
have
a
new review. I know the
answer's
yes.
Yes, we do. Fun, factual, 5 stars. Yeah. I really enjoy chilling with this podcast on. It's light and fun while factual and informative. Mike and Zoe's natural back and forth is always entertaining. Thank you very much. And the episodes do exactly what they say on the tin. I didn't even know we shipped our episodes in tins, but apparently we did.
It does sound a bit echoey.
I've enjoyed this on dog walks, while cooking, and even while unable to sleep. Very enjoyable. By Hawksy89, who is a personal friend of mine.
You're not supposed to say that.
89. It's fine. He's a friend of ours. He likes the show. And he wrote us a lovely review. So thanks. Yeah. So that's our new review.
Cool. So.
Yes.
If you have enjoyed this episode.
Yes.
And you would maybe like to contribute your own random strange story. You can email us at.
storiesofstrangeness@gmail.com.
If you want to keep up with the comings and goings of our random thoughts, which of there isn't that many, but we put them on Facebook.
Right, okay. Facebook.com/storiesofstrangeness. You get to the page and there is a join group button. If you would like to join the group and talk to us, you may do so.
You may.
Yes.
If you want to follow us in picture form, we are on Instagram.
@storiesofstrangeness. Instagram is probably the social network we use the most, but we post stuff from there onto Facebook and
Yeah. If you want to listen to our tweets.
How do you listen to a tweet?
I was just thinking.
What are you on about?
Do you want to listen
to
our tweet?
Have you gone wrong?
Tweet. Would you like to read a tweet?
Yeah.
Once
it's twoten.
If you would like to follow us on Twitter.
It is @sostrangepod.
And if you have missed any of those, or you just didn't understand what we were on about, you can find all of those links on our website.
Yep, or in the show notes.
Our website address is...
storiesofstrangeness.com.
Pick up the cue, my love.
I didn't even realise we were playing snooker.
I was playing... What's the other one?
The one... You play the one with the golf bats. Or the tennis guns.
Golf bats?
Yeah.
Aren't they clubs?
No.
Golf bats.
Golf bats.
Are they like actual bats with little golf
rackets.
Clubs?
Snooker rackets.
Snooker rackets. Yes. If you want to have...
Sports ball.
Oh, shut up. Oh, my God.
Go team.
If you want to look at our merchandise, our random logos and illustrations from our episodes,
yep,
which there will probably be more after this episode, so if Mike's helping me, you can have a look on Redbubble,
yep,
and see what we're doing.
Yep,
a bit of everything on there. Just search for Zoe and Mike, all one word.
Also, I'd like to do some more quotes to put on Redbubble or just for general artwork for Instagram. So I'd like you to email us with your favourite Stories of Strangeness quote.
It doesn't have to be email. It could be on Instagram, can't
all
it?
Right,
or
fine.
Facebook.
Just, yeah, I mean, shout it from a mountain, use
really
semaphore,
loud.
Smoke signals, anything.
I don't understand smoke signals.
Do you not?
No.
I've got a book.
Okay.
Well, it's not about smoke signals. I've just got a book.
You've just got a book. We can burn it and make... No.
Yeah, no. No, I think we're into dangerous territory there.
Anyway, if you want to help us out, because it's quite apparent that, you know, we need it.
We need the help.
You can sponsor us on Patreon. Now, we are not just asking for money.
No,
but
we give you stuff as well.
So we're not asking for something for nothing, but if you feel so inclined and you just want to donate a little tiny bit, we do have two different tiers.
Yep.
First tier is £1, which is how many dollars?
It's about $1.45-ish. I haven't actually looked it up for this episode, but it's around there.
Yeah. And for that, that is just a thank you.
We'll give you a shout out on
we'll
the show.
We'll give you a shout out on the show, obviously.
We can use your real name, nickname, online
name,
handle.
I don't know. Door handle.
Yeah.
You will receive our eternal gratitude because every little bit helps to the running of the website and the random equipment that we use.
Yep.
And the next tier, you do get something.
You do. You
outtakes.
Get quite a lot, I think.
You do. You get our outtakes. Money. You yep. get a mini-sode every other week. Well.
As well.
As well.
Yep.
Which is more random ramblings and a whole lot of fun.
Yep. We also post time-lapse videos of the drawings we've done when we can and where we can.
And yeah, I mean, obviously, you can dip in and out when you want. It's not something you have to continue with if finances do not allow.
It's permanent and binding. Consult a legal solicitor.
Shut up. But yes, and again, we give you a big shout out and we are eternally grateful for support and love and etc.
Cheers.
One last thing before we go. We have our random fact. The longest word in the English language has 189,819 letters. It is the full name of the protein nicknamed titin or titin. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Put your tit in.
I'm going to go with titin.
That's waking up in a vest, that is.
Do you know what? It's tit out if you
That's
wake
what
up
I'm in. Saying. Yeah, yeah, you need to put your tit in.
Yeah. And I'm not going to say it because it takes 3.5 hours to say out loud.
That'll be a minisode.
It's a maxisode if ever I heard one.
I can tell you the third longest word in the English language. It's pneumonal ultramicroscopic silica volcanoconiosis.
So,
and it's a lung disease caused by inhaling fine silica dust.
So if that's the third longest, and
yep.
this is the longest, that took like
seconds. Yeah.
I wonder the second longest. I have to look it up for next time. Okay.
Why not?
Is that it then?
Yeah, I think we're spent.
I think I need to go to sleep.
All right, night-night.
Okay, night-night.
Night-night. Bye.
Bye. Love you.